This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
Is another apocalyptic prediction about to come true? Winds of death sweep across the world, and whole continents will be cast adrift in an ocean of blood.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 51, Nudity and Horror.
Yeah, when it comes to horror, I mean, there are certain things that people like to see, and of course, blood is one, gore is another. We've discussed gore in a previous cast, and for better or for worse, and I guess in my case, for the better. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of the time, as long as it serves a story.
No, we're not.
Or not. Nudity is one. So, I mean, we're going to take a look at nudity and horror.
Looks like an entire wiki entry on the Friday the 13th series just devoted to the butts and the boobs.
Butts and
just
boobs,
in whatever 10 films in that, whether it be the, you know, Kevin Bacon's love interest in the first one with the side boob, to just the gratuitous as it got in later in the series. Just every single victim.
The Friday remake, I mean, there was pure gratuitousness. I mean, it was just, it got to the point where it became a parody of itself, right? Mm-hmm. Where just these tremendously buxom beauties, you know, with their
just doffing their clothes
at a moment's notice. Yeah, I mean,
thank God for that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you say that, but I mean, you know, we're gonna sort of examine nudity and say, like, I mean, does it really serve the plot? Do we need nudity? Do we not need nudity? Why is there nudity?
Yes.
Why?
Okay. And I don't know.
Well, I mean,
three,
like,
questions.
For example, like, you know, why is this genre known for the prevalence of nudity? I mean, what is it about?
Because I guess in the cultural change in the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. with you know, more permissive cultural attitudes and a genre that was pushing boundaries,
right,
that was
right.
one that would be, along with the Swedish, you know, sex films of the 70s, it would be the one just to, and it's part of the exploitation genre, so let's be honest, they're not shooting for the stars, creatively speaking, they're
right.
just trying to just, you know, generate any sort of reaction from its audience at any cost. And you do that through, I don't know, the violence, you know, in the peck and paw films. You do that with a high body count in the case of horror, and you do that with high boob count.
Yeah, no, it's just very true. I mean, like, when you look at some of the pioneers of the genre, and I'm talking about, you know, I'm not talking about your Murnaus and whatnot, and, you know, I'm talking about, like, you know,
yeah.
your Cormans and your H.G. Lewis's and whatnot, although H.G. Lewis is more known for the gore than the nudity. However, I mean, these guys, I mean, they wanted to make movies that sold, you know what I mean? Like, that was their ultimate goal. They wanted to make money. Now, as the years have passed, I mean, their movies have been reassessed as works of great art, but, I mean, the fact is that, you know, what sold? I mean, remember, horror movies, and we're not talking about the first wave, like, of, like, universal horror. I mean, that was, we're talking about, like, you know, the second wave, the drive-in. I mean, that's the thing. They were played in the drive-in.
In the drive-in,
for
yeah.
teenagers. And what teenagers wanted to see was monsters, well, the three Bs, blood, beasts, and boobs.
Yeah.
You know, and you're mentioning the 60s.
Yeah, I guess with the prevalence of the automobile and teenagers, you know, who comprise the audience of these things, developing autonomy by way of the car and the drive-in and, you know, the ubiquitous make-out points that you see in so many horror films, and that was the sign of the times, and you get your little spot of privacy, and for people who can't afford a hotel room, you go to your drive-in, and then the drive-in, you know, films is reflected that.
Right, but I was like, you know, and we're talking about the 60s, I mean, that, you know, arguably one of the greatest horror films of all time is made in the 60s, that was Psycho.
Psycho, yeah.
Now, sure. I mean, you know, amazingly enough, I mean, when Psycho was released, I mean, it was the height of controversy, right, for its gratuitousness, and yet when you look at the movie now, I mean, Hitchcock was the master at, you know, pushing right to the edge, but not going that, you know, like
yeah, you know, people really thought they saw the knife
penetrating
Janet Leigh there.
Yeah, it was all montage, right? Mm-hmm. The expert ending. You look at the shower scene. I mean, first of all, you know, you have Janet Leigh ostensibly naked. Of course, you don't see anything, right? I mean, it's all, again, just suggestion. Quick cuts, a towel strategically placed, etc. And, of course, the stabbing and everything else. I mean, that was effective. That was super effective.
And would have been effective had she been topless as well.
Well, no, but see,
you could say that because you're at your most vulnerable when you're naked. So,
but she was naked. We just didn't see her naked.
Yeah, well, it just heightens the effect as opposed to just teenagers in the woods who would just doff their clothing because they want to, you know, fuck or something. So that's different from someone who's alone and vulnerable and confined in a small space, which is a shower.
But what I'm saying is that, I mean, we look back at the, film scholars study that scene, that shower scene, over and over and over again. And if we would have seen, you know, full frontal nudity, if we would have seen the knife penetrate Janet Leigh's torso or abdomen, what have you, that scene would not have been nearly as effective, you know?
Yeah,
it's
who knows?
It's what we didn't see that made it effective. Now, am I saying that nudity is, filmmakers should be a little more creative, a little more Hitchcockian, and not show nudity? Absolutely not. I mean, that is part of the genre. And then we go, you know, of course, when some of the cultural mores and permissiveness sort of start to loosen, of course, you had the sexual revolution. Psycho predated the sexual revolution. Yeah. Cinema became more permissive, showed a lot more. We were talking about your Peckinpahs, you know, you're also talking about, like, you know, your Bonnie and Clyde, that was showing a lot more in the way of, like, you know, violence and blood and what have you. And so forth with the nudity. Now, I was trying to do some research. Now I'm trying to figure out, I was trying to find, like, the first horror movie
that showed a boob.
That showed a boob, and I couldn't.
No, I couldn't either.
Find
it,
but you did find out. You did some research as well.
Yeah.
And you found out the first
tough work here.
It is tough work, right? Yeah. You know, Googling boobs in cinema. But what is the first movie that actually showed nudity? And we're not talking pornography. We're talking about mainstream cinema.
Oh, I can't recall the title, but it would have been in the 30s. And I believe it was a Czech film, and it might have, I think, either spurred or maybe just predated the introduction of the so-called Hays Code that prescribed, various types of amorality, immorality, morality you could show in a film, and it obviously, you know, set the limits for the type of violence and, you know, whatever, I guess you would say, violence, nudity, and homosexuality at the time, and it probably was in response to some of the some of the gangster films that would have been prevalent at the time.
Okay.
So, but this was, again, a Czech film, and obviously they're more lax in Europe, so, and I believe Hedy Lamarr is one of the stars involved in, and maybe Jane Mansfield?
Jane Mansfield, she had a set of it. She had a set of
So there's various, I can't remember when the first nudity in a prominent Hollywood, widely distributed picture might have been, but obviously it depends upon the culture, and obviously it's going to be a lot more shocking to certain ones than others, but it predated Psycho by a good 30 years, showing boobs, and it seems particularly inextricably linked with, you know, the 80s slasher.
Cool, but before we get to that, I mean, of course it does, but, like, you know, before we get to, like, you know, the full on, you know, full frontal, like, you know, boobs, butts, and the other beat, for lack of a better word. So I mentioned the, you know, the first wave of horror, the universal, you know, your Frankensteins, your Dracula.
Yeah, very asexual.
Well, I mean, no, yes and no, because, I mean, Dracula was a sexual movie. I mean, Dracula is nothing
metaphor for
sex, however, you know, it's all basically suggestion and metaphor. And
yeah, I guess you can say that with the cat people, too.
I just
want to think of, you know, I think of the panther from Anchorman, you know, the pheromone perfume there, cologne. But, yeah, so that had subtext, but most of them
were... Well, that was Val Lewton's cat people, but then that was remade in the 80s, starring Natasha Kinski and Malcolm McDowell. I mean, all the subtlety and all the illusion and allegory, I mean, just went out the window. It was just pure, you know...
And then we probably talked about it as well with Wolfman being a subtext or allegory for puberty.
Puberty, yeah. Actually, I don't think we have mentioned that, but it, okay, it really does. Yeah, I
mean, you get hairy is yeah. the obvious one, and then you start to lose control of your faculties and your physicality, and you don't know what.
And you become a beast. You become your hormones. A feral beast. And I think it was Stephen King that sort of put forth that theory in his
Dance Macabre. Excellent, excellent book. I've read it cover to cover, and the cover is disintegrated. I've read it so many times, but yeah, that's a real great one. I think they reissued it recently with a new intro and stuff. That's well worth picking up.
For sure. So, okay, so so we have the horror. Obviously when I say, I'm not going to say the first wave, because, first wave is, your Nosferatus and your... That sort of stuff, but I'm talking about, the universal horrors. Everything was sort of, implied, everything was sort of, read between the lines, sort of, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, right? Then we had the Hammer horror films coming out of England, right? Now, these took the universal horrors and took it to the next level, where the universal horrors were in black and white, the Hammers were in glorious and some might say garish color, right? So the blood was luridly red, and the women, were a lot more, how shall we say, uninhibited than they were, so
It still, I guess, served the purpose of the plot, such as they were. There was really not much plot involved in a lot of those things as well, but at least it made sort of sense, again, as opposed to just, your
gratuitous.
So
I mean, so Hammer took, the template that was started by Universal Horror, and your James Whales and your Todd Brownings and whatnot, and they just made it, they threw in a little bit more sort of salaciousness, right? And yes, there was, they started to introduce full frontal, but as you were saying, it's sort of like indelibly linked with the 80s, the rise of the slasher genre. I guess when people think of your prototypical slasher film with kids sort of having sex and then getting offed, Friday the 13th is a film that,
for sure,
always comes to...
People always perceive it as reactionary and conservative, that people are being punished for their permissive, promiscuous behavior.
It's always, the virginal girl is always the last one standing.
And,
the ones that go off and smoke a joint and, engage in a bit of...
Hanky panky
or whatever,
In the shag carpeted van, a la prom night with the... with Slick. properly named Slick there with his weed plying his girl there. I was going to say, your shirt is rather salacious there, too.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Do you care to describe it?
Well, it's sort of like, I'm a big fan of Betty Page, right?
Yeah.
This is not this is sort of like a Betty Page-esque model, who is... it's sort of hard looking down. Maybe you can describe it. She's got a ball gag.
A ball gag, I was going to say. She's being trussed up by a rather lovely woman behind her, too, also equally scantily attired.
Yeah,
this is some fine work there.
I mean, it's I wear this on the streets with pride,
Yeah.
It's funny because...
as you should, yeah.
I don't get looked at askance, but I guess that's it. Maybe it's just because the rest of me is sort of just, if it's our aesthetic. I don't know. But, and you're dressed quite conservatively at this moment, too. your casual Friday
attire. Your casual Friday khakis, yeah. Do you remember the first few instances of nudity and horror that really had an impact on you?
Well, it's funny because, we've talked about this in previous podcasts. We talked about getting into horror, and how you and I, our sort of introduction to the world of horror was very different, whereas you were, deep ensconced in horror when you were a teen.
Yeah, I was, and then I left it and then came back to it, and you were a late, bloomer,
late adopter, I just delved in, right in the deep end. So for me, my pubescent years, right, when, or even my pre-pubescent years, when nudity in cinema would just have such an indelible effect on me. It wasn't horror; it was movies like
Revenge of the Nerds,
Revenge of the Nerds. Your Porky's, your DC Cabs, even your first Police Academies, that sort of stuff. All those '80s cheeseball teenage screwball comedies.
We got Bush.
You got it. I saw that in the cinema. That was the first movie I ever saw in the cinema that had both, you've said it, so boobs and Bush. I was just like, I walked out of the cinema. I don't even know how old I was. I was young, and I felt dirty. Like, for some reason, my father took me, and I mean, you know, as a child of divorce, right?
Yeah.
My father had me on Sundays, and we had nothing to talk about, so we just went and saw movies. So my father took me, and we saw Revenge of the Nerds, and I loved the movie, right? But I remember seeing this bush, and I felt like there was something, like, I felt guilty, like I had to cleanse myself, you know?
Yeah.
So I went home, and I told my mother. And, you know, Daddy took me to see this movie, and I saw you know, Woman's Private Parts, and, oh, man, was she furious.
Yeah, I can
she
imagine.
She called my father up and said, oh, dare you take Jeff to see that movie, da, 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 da. But,
oh,
I mean,
my God.
Yep, that was that, you know, but.
And then the details came out in a custody dispute hearing? No.
The custody was what.
That's interesting, too, because people just have it so easy now just to be able to, you know, a few keystrokes to just conjure up any sort of, you know, salacious image. But, you know, back in the day, you just didn't have that, you know, ability.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in Toronto, I think we discussed it in an earlier podcast about how City TV, which was the model for the TV station, pardon me, in Videodrome.
Civic TV, yep.
Civic TV. Mm-hmm. This was the sort of smutty station that sort of ran Swedish softcore films at around 11
baby
o'clock.
Blue movies.
Yeah, Baby Blue Movies. They came later to be known, and they were just, that's how they sort of built their brand, is showing this sort of smut in the 70s and 80s in Toronto.
Yep.
And I remember both that, but also, you know, Toronto's a very multicultural city, and we have, you know, Chinese and Italian language TV programming here.
Are you talking about Rye?
No, in a way, yeah. Like Rye's the Italian TV station, but Toronto broadcasters would show Italian softcore movies in Italian, and they would run them at like 1 and 3 in the morning.
Yep.
And I would check TV Guide and check the title, which is obviously in Italian. I check it with my trusty Italian English dictionary and find out if it was salacious, and then I would set my alarm and watch one of these things, and they invariably featured like some lecherous duke, or like some bodice ripper type thing, you know, some 17th century, you know, Venetian princess is being lusted after by this, you know, baron type, and he would look through a peephole, and then she would doff her top. Mm-hmm. So this was the kind of crap that I was into when I was, you know, 10 and 11, trying to, you know, I was watching my Italian softcores in the middle of the night with the volume turned low so my folks wouldn't hear it.
And speaking of City TV, I mean, we were also fortunate enough that they would show at like 5 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, like Fashion Television.
Oh, yeah.
Hosted by Jimmy Becker, you know?
Yeah, excellent. Yeah.
Right?
Fashion Television was, a worldwide phenom. I remember seeing it in Germany, and it was syndicated all over the world, and you would have the topless runway model.
Yeah.
Oh, glorious stuff.
And that's I mean, just like
clandestine changing backstage.
That little hint. Second of boob was just like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, it was walking up and down the aisles of my mom and pop video shop, you know, and seeing all these titles that I wanted to rent so badly, like Bikini Car Wash, and Bikini Car Wash 2, and Bikini Car Wash 3, and Bikini Car Wash 4. And, you know,
exhausted that.
Exactly, and on and on and on and on. And I mean, just all these, like, you know,
suds
these,
and sex.
All these TNA, you know, comedy romps that I just, you know, I mean, as a youth, I mean, I you know, basically my my parents are picking out, like, you know, Disney's, like, you know, The Sword and the Sorcerer for me, and I'm like, no, I want, you know, this, I want this, whatever. Welcome, just like, you know, having this frustration, like, you know, I mean, look at this box, and like picking it up and turning it over and being like, oh my God, like, why, I want to see this. Even look at some, like, you know, women in prison movies, like, you know, Cage Heats or Chained Heats or
that would have been your introduction to the sapphic desires.
No,
they're heavily lesbian centric. You know, Chained Heat, obviously, and there's just countless imitators.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would have been, that's something where you have the, you know, the sort of masculine prison guard lording over these nubile prisoners who obviously frolic with one another, and this
there's always a shower scene.
Shower scene.
There's always a wrestling scene. Yeah. And, like, you know, invariably it's raining, and they're in like a mud pit, and they're running around and stuff. And then, of course, I mean, we've talked about this before, but, like, I mean, the cinema of Russ Meyer was like a revelation.
Yeah, for sure.
But getting back to horror, I mean, once again, I mean, there's something about the genre that, It's like having a horror movie without nudity sometimes is like bread without butter.
Yeah.
Although you maintain that a good piece of bread doesn't need butter.
No, this is true. Bad analogy. Okay, it's about peanut butter and chocolate.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Abbott and Costello, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Abbott with
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's a perfect one. Yeah. Yeah. Ike and Tina.
Tina did pretty well without Ike.
You can't beat that.
Okay, but anyway.
Yeah. Terrible joke.
Damn it.
There
it
is. Oh! Yeah, there you go.
You're making one, so yeah.
And yeah, I don't know what this says about me, but me and my buddy Craig, we used to rent these horrible schlocky things from the corner store, and obviously anything with Massacre in the title, but we did both a kill count and a boob count. So, obviously, the higher for both, the better. So, they're positively correlated. That translated into top marks for this budding, Siskel and Ebert that we were at 12 years old. And I remember, hospital massacre with the buxom woman changing behind the curtain.
Is Barbie Benton, was that in that?
Yes. And
playmate Barbie Benton.
Yeah, and then she is on the examination table and being, felt up, basically, in this really gratuitous, examination, in quotes, of, I guess it was, a boob examination. I don't know what it was. And then there's that, and obviously Barbara Crampton, even with the severed head there. Mm-hmm. But that, she was just, holy crap. So those were the two, real standout boobs for me. And well, obviously the Friday the 13th series as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing too. You have your scream queens, right? I mean, we were talking about this with back when we interviewed
Aaron Ryan,
and we asked her about, a lot of these scream queens were known for not just their acting,
their screaming,
but also their ability to doff their clothes at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
Barbara Crampton was one, and when you had Reanimator from Beyond,
I guess it haunts her to this day.
But
really.
Barbara Crampton was a good actress. But at the same time, she was always willing to take off her clothes. Another one was Linnea Quigley. This is something, Return of the Living Dead. She has one of the most memorable, I wouldn't even say nude scene, because she's nude for a third of the movie, if not more. Where, she basically, she strips naked and dances on a tombstone, and all your other, scream queens, your Brooke Stevens and and so on. I mean, that's the thing. They were known for screaming, getting chased, and taking off their clothes. But beyond these scream queens, your Cramptons, your Quigleys, etc.
Laura Gemser. Well,
I was thinking, I want to get to the Europe part in a moment or two, but talking about America, we'll still talk about America. Then you have a filmmaker by the name of, Jim Wynorski. Are you familiar with Jim Wynorski?
No.
The guy is known for making a lot of straight-to-video schlock. There was a recent documentary called Mr. Papatopoulos, because that's his nickname, right?
Okay.
And he's known for, casting buxom women in his movies and having them doff their tops. But, the guy's made some great movies, I love his movies. Chopping Mall, Sorority House Massacre 2.
Oh, yeah, of
starring the Melissa Moore, who we know from Samurai Cop. She of the Childbearing Hips. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Cheerleader Massacre. And on and on and on. Then he went on and made movies like The Bear Wench Project, Bear Wench Project 2. before we get into Europe, talking about here, a lot of actresses that, you don't see them in the altogether. They make a horror movie, or they make a movie within that genre.
Yeah, you have to.
And then they're naked.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of, for example, Katie Holmes.
Yes.
The Gift. Did you ever see that film?
I saw 20 seconds of it.
That's only 20 seconds worth seeing, right? It's definitely not for Keanu Reeves' performance.
It's got that dude who had the late night show there. Craig Kilborn's
What about Alyssa Milano in Embrace of the Vampire?
I probably Googled that one as well. Yeah, I never saw the whole thing. Yeah.
Drew Barrymore in Doppelganger. Even recently, Scarlett Johansson made a film called Under the Skin, where she basically showed everything.
Well, I think that, hacked cell phone beat that to the punch, did it not?
The fapping?
Yeah.
That's what it's called.
Oh, right? Lord.
But then, and also you had, this is one I think is a favorite of both of ours, The Hunger.
Yes.
Susan Sarandon. And Catherine Deneuve.
Yeah. And Catherine Deneuve was in one of my favorites. This is, not to do with nudity, but obviously Repulsion. With Roman Polanski. It was just... this is another tangent again, but no nudity, black and white, terrifying. as can be, and very restrained. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a Psycho-type restraint released at around the same time, if I'm not mistaken. But, yeah, Susan Sarandon, you can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, I mean, talking about, like, sapphic love scenes.
Yeah,
there,
yeah.
You know, you had those two, and that sort of vampire tale or David Bowie. I mean, wow, what a scene that was.
Vampire and tale. There you go.
Yeah, and then, of course, and then we go again into Europe. I mean, it's totally different. You got your... You got filmmakers, for example, Jess Franco. He made countless... I mean, some of these European filmmakers are so prolific, but, I mean, one of my absolute favorites, and, I mean, you gotta love the title, Vampiros Lesbos.
I saw that in one of my movie guides. That this is a must-see, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not much of a movie, I gotta say. I mean, it's eye candy and it's ear candy. The soundtrack is incredible, right? But, I mean... Soledad Miranda, who's in a lot of Franco's films, and Ewa Stromberg as, you know, two, again...
Lesbian vampires?
Yeah, I mean, oh my god, unbelievable. And so Franco is one who's, you know, known for making movies that are, you know, within the genre, but more focused on the female flesh and the fright, you know? Another one, and this is a filmmaker who basically is really, like, I think when it comes to balancing nudity... sexuality and scares, Jean Rollin, French filmmaker. Have you heard of him?
No.
Okay, well, you've heard of a. You must have heard of obviously Living Dead Girl, like from the Rob Zombie.
Yeah,
style, right?
Yeah.
Well, that title was taken from a film of his. He's made films like Living Dead Girl, Fascination, Requiem for a Vampire, Lips of Blood, The Nude Vampire, Rape of the Vampire. These are arty films, and these are really. I mean, a lot of them star French porn star Brigitte Lahaie, right? And I mean, unbelievable stuff. Just really, really hypnotic, really surreal. Again, not the most.
Plot-driven?
No, not the most plot-driven. Some of them are, like, again, like, some sort of, like, the linear fashion is sort of, like, you know, it's not there. It's almost like, you know, they're very dreamlike, right? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say Fulci-esque, but they're very languid. Languidly paced, I guess, is what I want to say. But, I mean, Rollin is one who, again, he's known for, you know, combining those two, you know, the scares and the nudity. And I think of all filmmakers who, are known for both. I mean, Franco, Vampires, I mean, it's a titillating movie. It's a scary no, but Rollin, I mean, Living Dead Girl is actually pretty, you know, it's a pretty scary film. So, I mean, I would definitely put him up there as one of my favorites when it comes to that sort of thing. What about some of your, like, do you have a favorite Scream Queen?
Well, apart from the obvious, Jamie Lee Curtis.
But Jamie Lee Curtis never doffed her clothes. Well, she did in Trading Places, but she never
But not in horror. Which just seemed like
PJ Souls did in Halloween, did she not?
I believe so.
Yes, but
was she above the material?
Maybe I don't know. Maybe she was just too young, but I don't know.
But as I said, the one with whom you're supposed to identify is not supposed to do that.
Right.
So and with the whole morality tale, like, clouding the whole thing.
Yeah,
so
she was
She's the final girl, you can't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess, you know, yeah, it prompts the question, like, if it's going to become almost old hat when you have, you know, Miley Cyrus Instagramming her own boobs and just and everyone, seemingly every third starlet out there, a reality show or pop singer, has, you know, her boobs flashed out. Like, will this even be an issue anymore? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I want to talk a bit about Misty Monday. Misty Monday is one of my absolute favorites. She appeared in a lot of movies for Seduction Cinema. Unfortunately, she's retired. A lot of the movies were sort of like erotic parodies of larger, you know, budget successful Hollywood movies like Spider Babe and Lord of the G-Strings and An Erotic World in London, etc. She was also in, you know, movies like titled like Chakarama and Bite Me and so on and so forth. Misty Monday, this I don't know, the thing about Misty Monday, I mean, she was not as well endowed as, you know, let's say your Barbara Crampton's.
Yeah.
I mean, she was, I mean, how shall we say it? She was, I'm not going to say it.
She was less than endowed?
Yeah, she's flat.
Oh, okay.
There you go. I mean, fair enough. But there's, I mean, normally, like, you know, the girls that I sort of like in these movies are a little bit more pneumatic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But there was something about Misty Monday. Oh, my gosh. She just had this girl-like store appeal. and I absolutely loved her. And I, the movies she made, some were quite schlocky, some were quite humorous, but boy, oh boy, do I miss seeing Misty Monday and
In all her glory.
In all her glory, yeah. there's her. Now, the other thing I want to ask you is there an actress that has appeared in genre films who never doffed her clothes that you wanted to see?
Jennifer Love Hewitt?
Interesting.
Yeah, because she's on, I guess she might have just left some, again, schlocky, police procedural, Criminal Minds.
Oh, what's that?
Yeah, and she still looks, unbelievably good. Like, she hasn't aged a year, that woman. So, that would have been just fantastic. I Know What You Did Last Summer would have been just something to take that to the next level. It's kind of sort of a pedestrian film, but, obviously, her in her prime, that would have been... Yeah, that's the one that everyone really missed out on.
I'm going to put you on the spot right now, man. Did you watch Party of Five? Were you a Party of Five watcher?
There you go. And when we're talking about, Scream, there you go. It's interesting how the two stars of that film ended up in these big sort of schlocky horror films.
Neve Campbell,
a fine Canadian actress.
Uh-huh. And she was in the movie Wild Things with Denise Richards, where there was
it was very sexy, but she was not naked.
Not naked at all, right? Yeah, Denise Richards was. Basically it sort of made her.
But there was something intriguing about Neve Campbell. Or Neve, or I don't know how you say it, but yeah, she had a certain smoldering sensuality, and it added to a little her mystique that she wasn't just dropping her top at a moment's notice at the whim of some perv director. But, can you think of anything?
Well, the one that got away, so to speak, is Carolyn Monroe.
We're such pervs.
Carolyn Monroe.
Carolyn Monroe.
I love Carolyn Monroe from Star Crash, Maniac.
Oh, okay.
Spinell's love interest in Maniac. Just one of my absolute favorite, just beautiful, gorgeous, actresses who was, a horror actress, etc. And she was always, in Star Crash, her outfit basically consists of two strips of fabric, just...
How buxom, to use your term, pneumatic, was she? Well, that's an excellent term.
At the risk of offending our female listeners, want to, because, the thing with horror is, I'm glad it's becoming more inclusionary, there's a lot of female, I don't want to get too descriptive, but...
I discussed the different varying body types in something like Babysitter Massacre, which is really, really interesting, and kind of taking things forward in a new direction, casting the nudity net wide.
But yeah, Carolyn Monroe, she was between your Misty Monday and, your Kitten Navidad from Russ Meyer. She was a good singer, right?
Yeah.
She was always, the smoldering sex bond in her movies, but she just never went all eyes. It's sort of like Raquel Welch, has she ever...
Not that I know of.
Yeah. There's some of these actresses just they just didn't take that final
that
step. It's amazing, because, not a lot of people know this, but even Meryl Streep did nudity once. I'm not quite sure the movie, but she did nudity as well. And it wasn't a horror film, but, So,
and I guess we're grateful on the one hand that more men don't do nudity, really, because who wants to see that? As you know, was it Elaine on Seinfeld who said, the male body is just so utilitarian? And then when you have maybe exemplars like May He Rest in Peace, Robin Williams, and Harvey Keitel showing very little in the way, below the belt, shall we say, kudos to them for wanting to show that, but my God. That was pretty,
Here we are, we're two heterosexual men.
Yeah, true.
Talk about nudity and cinema. Yeah. We have to, this is...
In the interest of inclusion, we discuss men nude in film as well.
Yeah, at this point I'm going to say, let's have nudity equality.
Yeah.
I don't care,
Yeah, why not?
Why not? It's fine.
I guess you reviewed a film on the site that had real sex in it, and I was thinking of the Michael Winterbottom film Nine Songs, the one I saw that has real sex, and it left me very cold. It's interesting that horror has never adopted that, and they sort of, at least, obviously hardcore horror will go into those that reach into that territory, but the more mainstream stuff, that's another,
exactly,
but they really don't show a hell of a lot. Like, there's very little in the way of salacious, erotic, even lesbianism or you know, male nudity or anything really salacious. It's just usually top is gone.
It's quite perfunctory, actually.
Yeah. Perfunctory, just boobs, and then kill, and done. And there's, very little eroticism. It's very odd how that works.
But that's why, I mean, I think The Hunger stood out, because that, that was a very erotic film, you know?
Yeah. But I guess that was from a different genre. They're trying to be an art film. Yeah. And it was vampires, and they don't have the, you know, some maniac with a, you know, with a pike or a chainsaw or like a, you know, an outboard motor who's just plowing through his victims, you know, willy-nilly, as we say. But, yeah, I don't know. Where does the nudity go from here?
Well, I mean, you know,
what frontiers can we explore now?
You know, I mean, it's really interesting you say that, because, you know, I think it's everything has been explored to the point. I mean, when it comes to nudity, how much further can you get? There's only so much skin you can show. They've shown every square inch of skin in cinema.
Yeah.
Then where nudity, the next step of nudity has already been taken. That's David Cronenberg with your body horror, showing what's inside the body. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
taking
true.
Nudity, you're turning it inside out, and all of a sudden, what is erotic becomes
unerotic.
Unerotic, compulsive, disgusting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, body horror is definitely is another facet of, you know, nudity and horror, which we're not really going to get into right now. I mean, that could be a whole other podcast in amongst itself.
Oh, for sure.
But I mean, you know, like, there's a whole subgenre of movies. Like, there's a lot of, I mean, we talk about The Reanimator. There's a movie out there called The Repenetrator. There's a lot of these porn, you know, parodies and stuff. And we're not, you know, that's for another site to talk about, another podcast.
For
but,
sure.
I mean, I mean, with the internet now, I mean, you know, these experiences that we describe, staying up late to, you know, catch just a glimpse of nipple on, you know, a late night TV station, or, you know, scouring the mom and pop video shops is hoping, praying that, you know, you might be able to sneak in a title underneath, like the latest Bad News Bears or Bentley outing. It doesn't happen anymore. So where's Nick going to go next?
We don't know.
Who knows? And you know what? I'm even afraid to know.
No. we focus on B movies and your B cup, I guess, and your A and C movies,
D,
as it were.
And, you know, I mean, like I said before, like, you know what? Like I said, I'm, you know, one thing I'm happy now is that horror is no longer just a boys' club. I mean, it's a very inclusionary genre.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of women, female fans, and so, you know, let's just open up the nudity floodgates. So let's see it
and,
all, man.
And we promise never to appear nude on our site.
You promise that? I promise.
All right, I promise. www.reallyawfulmovies.com, and we'll talk to you soon.